Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Saturday, April 14th. Today, we're going to take a look at American politics, the world of American politics, with our good friend Barry Castleman, the Prairie Editor. There's a lot of things we're going to get into tonight. We're going to talk about President Trump's foreign policy. It seems to be successful, I think, certainly from where I'm standing. You had a successful attack on Syria yesterday. I mean, he's moving with North Korea. There was the cooperation of allies like the UK and France in this attack in Syria. So I think that's a step in the right direction. China is all of a sudden interested in talking and negotiating with the United States. All the talk about a trade war, it was just that, just a lot of talk. The economy on the whole seems to be doing well. There was one significant bit of news this week. Speaker Paul Ryan is leaving the House. He's retiring. My guess is that he'll come back in some way, but he wants to go home and spend some time with his family, and I can certainly understand that. A lot of talk about the 2018 midterms. You know, you get speculation on both sides. The Democrats are telling you there's a big wave out there. The Republicans are saying not so fast. It's hard to tell. It's hard to tell because, as we saw in this latest report that Barry Castleman wrote about the U.S. Senate, it's all about the candidates. I mean, if the Republicans put up some good candidates, you could have some very significant turnover in the U.S. Senate, particularly in those red states like West Virginia, Montana, and so on. So lots to get into tonight with our friend Barry Castleman, the Prairie Editor. So let's go north and say hello to a man who is in the middle of a snowstorm. How are you, Barry?
I'm beleaguered, but I think it's going to be over in a day or two. It'll melt quickly. But, you know, for your listeners in warmer climates, it's the frustration of winter being prolonged is very, very depressing up here in the Northland.
Well, it's interesting because here in Texas, obviously, we don't have anything like that in April, but it does seem like winter always has a last farewell, as that famous song by Roger Whittaker. And with us, it was last weekend when we had some really cold temperatures in the 30s. That's pretty cold for us here in Texas in April. And for you, it appears to be the snow up there. So winter, winter doesn't go away on March 20th like it's supposed to. It seems like there's always an extra chapter to winter, and I think you're probably having that. But as I recall from living up in Wisconsin years ago, it snows like this, but it's going to melt pretty quickly because the temperatures will go up to the 40s and maybe 50s pretty soon, and probably in a few days you won't even remember that it snowed, Barry.
That's correct.
Okay. Well, let's get into it. We got a lot of topics tonight. I mentioned foreign policy, trade, the speaker, the midterms, the U.S. Senate. I tell you what, I'll let you pick the first topic. What would you like to get into first?
Well, I want to get something off my chest here. I've been watching, and you've been watching, and the country's been watching this interminable attack on President Trump attempting to undo the election of 2016, talk of impeachment, talk of bringing criminal charges. I mean, I've never seen there, you know, I mean, yes, Richard Nixon had to resign and Bill Clinton was impeached but did not leave office. But there seems to be I don't think I've ever seen anything where beginning with the election itself, the opposition and the biased media have attempted in a very heavy-handed fashion to wreck administration. Now, what's interesting, and you've said it yourself, and even some Democrats are conceding this, the president, I'm not saying he hasn't made mistakes, And I certainly don't agree with all the things he says, but he seems to be quite successful in both domestic and foreign policy. And we'll get into that as you suggested. But this attempt to constantly harangue and belittle and slander the president and by the way, almost all of it, none of it is activity that has taken place since he was sworn in as president, which of course would, if there were things, that would be everything is from the past, including the distant past, his business past. That's not the purview of the special counsel, as I understand it. It isn't even his responsibility. I think at some point, I mean, this has been ongoing, and there's been very little evidence. Yes, there's been some minor wrongdoings by individuals who had associations, even briefly or not so briefly, with the president. But this has gone on too long. I can't imagine. And what I don't particularly understand is why you have a Justice Department that presumably works for the president, in which, now I'm not including Sessions here, but certainly Rod Rosenstein and all of some of the lower deputy attorney generals, they seem to be working against the president. Why are they in office? That's not the way you run a government.
No.
Who are attempting to undermine you. I'm sorry.
Right.
Now, part of the
no,
responsibility
is
he hasn't nominated enough people, but he has nominated another bunch of people who haven't been approved, and I believe that Mr. McConnell, the majority leader, has had enough, and he has already this weekend laid down the law and said he wants either these people to be confirmed or nobody's going home for the weekend. And and for this weekend or next weekend or the next weekend. So he's finally doing, and we're not talking about judges here.
Right. No, I know.
Approved. But we're talking about other officials, which are much needed, and they needed to be working for the president, not working for his opposition.
And let me just say a couple of things, Barry, because we've had you on the show many times, but for anyone who's listening to us today for the first time, Barry is not a Republican. And I just want to make sure that, because I think your remarks, the reason they're so meaningful is because you're not a partisan Republican. You're not a partisan Democrat. You've been an independent all your life, and you write at the Prairie Editor some very fascinating stuff that is very much right down the middle, and you call it as it is. You're not a partisan Republican when you say what you just said. So I just wanted to explain that to some of the listeners, because when someone like you, who is, I think, as independent as anybody that I have on my show, when you say what you just said, I think it gives it a lot of validity. I just want to say a couple more things on this topic, Barry, before we go on. Number one, I agree with you about these confirmations. I am so fed up with, and I suppose they did it to President Obama. I'm not going to say that it's the first time. But look, I think when a president gets in, he should have, within 30 or 45 days, his team in place. This idea that we just drag on these things, it's really, I think, not fair to the people who voted for the president. It's not fair to the president, who he may be, Democrat or Republican. I felt the same way during the Obama years. I say, you know, he won the election. Give him the team that he wants. So I think number one. The second thing I wanted to say to follow up with your comments about the media, I think this is starting to backfire, Barry, and we're seeing it. And, for example, with the exception of MSNBC, which continues to have a large audience, relatively speaking small when you think of a country of 300 million people, but for cable news they're getting about 3.5 million every night or something like that. But other than that, and those are basically the people who tune in every night to hear every conspiracy theory about Trump, I think the country is getting tired of it, Barry. I think there's a sense of, hey, let's just give this guy, leave this guy alone. You know, if you don't like him, vote against him the next time. But enough is enough. That's the sense I have. And I know that we are in, I'm in Texas, which is a pretty conservative Republican state. But I'm hearing that. I'm sensing that, Barry, from other parts in the country, Barry. I mean, do you feel the same way that there's a what they like to call enough is enough factor here, Barry?
Well, I think the key voters here are not Democrats. Democrats, understandably, and perhaps from a legitimate opposition point of view, don't like Mr. Trump. They're never going to like him. They're never going to vote for him. That's the way it is. That's the way our country is. The same is true on the other side. But the real prize here for the communications media is the independent voters, the voters who may or may not be registered with one party or not, but really can move from one party to the other, sometimes voting even for independent candidates when they appear and are appealing. And I think if there is, and I think you may be right, a backlash taking place, it's among these voters. And one of the reasons we know this is because, even though, as you know, I'm a very skeptical about all polls these days, the Rasmussen poll has the best results for the president, and the last one has him at 50 favorable, 49 negative, which means he's doing very well, especially in relation to where President Obama was at the same time. Now, some people say that's not a credible poll. Well, I think it is. I don't think it's necessarily that accurate. I think it may even be understating the case. But one of the reasons, there's a reason why it's accurate, is that they conduct their polls without live interviews. And one of the problems with live interviews is that people are very reluctant to tell a live person what they really think these days, especially these days where you have as controversial a person and president as President Trump. And one thing I will agree, he's very controversial. But even the other polls, the polls where had him in the 30s, the mid to high 30s, they're all upped into the 40s. So he is in every poll, he is moving up significantly. And that would tell me that, considering that the negative news about him in the anti-Trump media has been very relentless, the so-called mainstream media, that there is a backlash, because I think people are saying enough, as you've put it, enough is enough. I think that every new thing, like the latest one is with the attorney, every new thing is the imminent demise of the president. He's going to resign. He's going to be impeached. He's not going to get the Electoral College. His states are going to be overturned. We've had 25 or 30 crises in less than 2 years, year and a half, in which the president is done, finished, finito, according to the anti-Trump media, and he comes out stronger every time. I mean, what is this? I mean, I'm not talking about whether you agree or disagree. This is a provable phenomenon. He has never been, except in the very beginning when all presidents have high numbers, he's never been as strong in terms of polling as he is now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been all this negative news, including all this news about his attorneys and the people resigning and all these sort of things. But as you point out, and we can get into the specifics, he's having both a successful foreign policy, not unanimously, not everything is right. He makes mistakes. Everyone makes mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
But
sure. For
the most part, his foreign policy is working. His trade policy, incredibly negative, received incredibly negative responses when he first talked about tariffs. Turns out it's working. South Korea, China. I mean, the leaders, because as he understood, as any negotiator understands, when you've got the stronger hand, you can make these. I don't know if they're bluffs, because I think he intends to. He would have intended to follow through, but we're in the driver's seat here in many ways. And it isn't that we want to take advantage. It's that the other side has been insinuatingly over decades, over Republican and Democratic presidents. George W. Bush is just as guilty as Barack Obama in many ways.
Well, that's true.
Allowing a lot of foreign countries, whether they be in NAFTA or China or in Europe, to impose virtually invisible tariffs, at least no publicity was given, whereas we didn't. And the president says, this isn't going to go in. This can't go on. We've got this trade deficit, and we got to fix it. And it's working.
Right.
So,
and what I find is fascinating about his trade talk is that, yes, there was a lot of negative reaction. I mean, just for the record, I supported NAFTA, and I think NAFTA overall has been fairly decent for both sides. So NAFTA, you know, I think you can always adjust it. It's 25 years old, so you have to renew it, but I think overall has been okay. But China has not been. The relationship with China has not been favorable in many ways. And what I find fascinating is that when he took the position that he took on China, that is a tough position from China, he put a lot of Democrats in a very difficult situation. If you're a Democrat from Ohio, from Michigan, from Wisconsin, from Missouri, from Indiana, from Pennsylvania, all of a sudden, you know, what Trump was saying about China was very similar to what some of these Democrats were saying, particularly Democrats with strong ties to the unions. And so I think, politically speaking, I think that it did help him with many of these Democrats, because he was basically saying the same thing they were saying about China, Barry.
Well, I think he made a strong appeal. He made that appeal in the campaign in 2016, and that's why he did so well. Remember, I think for all his background as a rich kid, I have the notion that basically at heart, Donald Trump has the sensibility of a blue collar worker, and sympathetic to working people, arising specifically from his relationships in the construction business, which he was in the real estate construction business in New York and elsewhere, and had to work very closely with working men and women, and had to understand their concerns, or else he would have not been able to be successful. And I think he's taking that and putting it to work in the presidency. And that, by the way, is also something which is a root cause, partly, of the anti-Trump establishment Republican feeling. These
yes.
are establishment Republicans who are self-styled elites, went to Ivy League schools. So, you know, I went to an Ivy League school too, but I don't feel that way. So I don't mean to paint everybody who went to an Ivy League school, but most of them, many of them did. Many of them, you know, it's not that many of them are consider themselves elite conservatives and have an establishment view of conservatism, and he's disrupting that. He's a disrupting president.
Right.
And
well,
you know
I have
what?
To tell you,
you
that
and I discussed this several times on this program. It was the time for disruption. The country
right.
was getting stale and stalemated, and it was time for a president to come along. And,
right. Well,
we both wish he was more articulate.
Well,
in the way he did it, but you know that's part of the way he operates.
Right,
and
that's
the
exactly
tweeting,
right. I mean,
the tweeting actually,
yes.
On balance, works for him. It's not what I would do. It it makes me cringe on occasion.
Yes.
But and sometimes he makes outright mistakes and says things that aren't true, but they're all for an effect.
Right. Well, I have to tell you that when it comes to free trade, I've always been a free trader. I've always, in theory or in practice, I prefer free trade. I mean, I criticized President Obama in 2008 when he ran against NAFTA, when he ran against the Colombia Free Trade Agreement. I have always supported a lot of free trade with Latin America. But when it comes to China, that's kind of where I draw the line, because China really has been taking advantage of the United States. And right now, China is a real menace to countries in Latin America like Mexico and Brazil, who do a lot of manufacturing and exporting. And, you know, China is a threat to them. So, you know, we have allies in our battle with China. But so when President Trump started talking about China, I was on board. I said, hey, we got to do something about the Chinese. We got to do something about the way they do business. I'm not, maybe not necessarily a tariff, but we got to do something to level the playing field. But before we go on break, and then we'll get into the midterms and your article about the Senate in the next segment, I do want to say one thing, that as you know, Barry, that during the primaries, I had concerns with President Trump. And like you, I feel that the way he does business, you know, his tweets at times, I think he picks way too many fights with people that he shouldn't be picking a fight with. I wish he wouldn't pick fights with or say things about Mr. Mueller or some of the other people. I wish he would just let that fly. Like when he got into a fight with a senator from New York, no reason to do that. Just no need to do that kind of stuff. But you know, it is who he is. That's his personality. You know, it kind of reminds me of an old baseball analogy, and then we'll take a break. There was a pitcher back in the late 70s who was a great relief pitcher, but whenever he came in, you knew he was going to get the save, but you knew he was going to walk at least two batters.
Hold on.
and that's just the way it was. And but yet he got the save. And sometimes President Trump reminds me of that. We're going to take a little break. We're going to hear from my friend Carlos Geddes. And then after the break, we're going to talk to Barry about the Senate and the Congress in 2018.
This is Carlos Geddes Harpies. I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Tzatziki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Tzatziki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And we have all of Carlos' schedule on the website. If you go to the show information, it's right there, and click on it, and it'll take you to his website where you can check out where he's going to be around town. Well, Barry, let me get back to the topic of the midterms and the elections. But let's talk about, before we get there, in a very good article that you wrote about the U.S. Senate. And, you know, how it looks to you at the moment. Talk to me a little bit about Paul Ryan. You wrote a post about this in the last couple of days, I think. And talk to me as to what was your reaction to Paul or Speaker Ryan getting out or leaving politics altogether, at least for the time being, Barry?
Well, I'm surprised you didn't do it sooner.
Okay.
I think
Barry, I lost
great...
you there. Forgive me. Excuse me for a second. I lost you for like about 20 seconds. So go back to when you first said you're not surprised, or you're not surprised
right.
that he didn't.
So
do
I
it
wasn't
what,
surprised.
Just start with that, please.
Okay. I thought he would resign even before this, or not resign, but retire. The job of speaker these days is a thankless job and a complicated one, and. It's not a job that one keeps for a long time, and he's been as skillful as anyone doing it, at least since Newt Gingrich. But the point is, Paul Ryan, I think, has done a really outstanding job as speaker. I haven't always agreed with him, but I certainly have my questions about the budget deal and all the spending that's going on. Although I understand why they did it, and the strategic point behind it, but I think he just got to the point where, you know, he's still a relatively young man with a young family, and he tried to leave once before, and they talked him into running for speaker, and initially the various forces got together behind him, and then of course they started splitting up again. And, you know, sometimes the Republicans are their own worst enemy in the House and in the Senate. And Mr. McCarthy will now be the speaker. I liked Mr. Scalise, but he's decided he's not going to contest for speaker. He's going to be the new majority leader moving up from whip. And this leadership, McCarthy is no Paul Ryan. Hopefully he will do well. He has been aligning himself more and more with the president, and that's a good sign. Because one thing that Paul Ryan was doing his best to work with the president, but they were really of different temperaments. And that made their relationship somewhat tenuous. I think Mr. McCarthy will be a stronger supporter of the president in temperament, as well as in, as an ally in the House, but I think that Mr. Ryan's departure is a loss, but it was pretty much inevitable. I think its impact on the elections will be a net negative for the Republicans, because Mr. Ryan was a prodigious fundraiser. And one thing the Republicans must do now is they have to raise money to stay competitive in a lot of races. I know there's a lot of talk about a blue wave and Republican Democrats taking over the House. It could happen. As I have been writing, and I'm not alone, my friend Newt Gingrich has been saying this too, even more in a more partisan fashion, perhaps, but he's been arguing that we don't have any evidence yet of a wave. And a wave would have to be pretty big. You know, they say there are 67 vulnerable seats, of which 55 are Republican. When I look at the list, the objective list of those seats, I see that, yes, in an extreme situation, many of them could lose, but I would say about 30 of those houses, seats, 25 and five Democrats, 20 Republicans, aren't really that vulnerable unless, you know, the sky falls in politically. And therefore, so instead of 67, it's more like 40 seats, of which about 30 are Democrats. And even among those 30 Democrats, 15 of them aren't really, I mean, they could lose. Things could turn south for the Republicans. But there's no indication yet. The Democrats, as is their right and their obligation, are going to mount strong campaigns. And they're going to run against Trump, and they're going to run against... But they're not going to be able to run against his record, because he's having some success. And if the economy is strong, Silvio, this game is over.
Right.
People are not going to trade a booming economy for the opposite possibility with the Democrats, because that's what the Democrats brought us in their period of periods of running the country.
Let me, if I may, just jump in and say something. When I look at all of these, and there's tons of information out there, both sides saying what they have to say, because part of this is psychological too. You got to keep your troops, you know, in the game, as they say. But when I look at the House map, the Senate, of course, being very different. But when you look at the House map, a lot of the seats that the Democrats would have to win to make up those 25 seats, a lot of the seats that they're going to have to win are between the coast, if you will, between, you know, the Atlantic and the Pacific, all of those states in the middle. And I don't see how the Democrats can pick up those states. Now, they could do what they did in Pennsylvania or get really lucky like they did in Alabama. But those, I think, were exceptions. But, you know, how does a Democrat with this National Democrat Party compete in districts in the middle of the country, in Missouri and Oklahoma and so on? So for them to pick up 25 seats, they're going to have to basically win everything in California, in Pennsylvania, in New York, in states like that. That's the only chance they have, because really once they go in the middle of the country, Barry, they're in deep trouble. I mean, how do you win when you're running against the Second Amendment or so on? So that's why I've always been skeptical of the blue wave. It could happen. I mean, look, I could be dead wrong. But if there's a blue wave, there's going to be a lot of Democrats like the one we saw in Pennsylvania who basically ran as a Republican, Barry.
Well, that's one of the reasons that they're even competitive in some of these races. They've been smart enough to run conservative or moderate Democrats instead of far-left Democrats. But the real trend in the party is to the movement to the far left. And the Bernie Sanders, Maxine Waters, wing of the party that's moving, you know, wants to have single-payer Medicare and all these things. So your point is well taken. Now, they're not going to win every seat. Not only win every seat. There's two seats they're going to probably lose in Minnesota that are now Democrats, both of whom have retired, and almost certainly one and probably two of those seats are going to go Republican. So that they got to now not only win 25, they got to win 27. And I think there's three other seats they are going to lose. So they're going to lose five seats no matter what. No, not no matter what, but very likely. So now they, instead of winning, have to win 25, they have to win 30. And that's assuming they're going to win every one of those 25 seats, and that's not going to happen either. So unless the sky falls in, in which case the sky falls in. But they still won't have, almost certainly won't have the Senate. So we'll have an attempt to impeach the president, which will go nowhere. And meanwhile, the Republicans are likely to gain seats in the Senate and therefore gain situation. So they won't have to worry about a single senator of their own, like the senator from Tennessee, Rand Paul, who stands in the way of confirmations.
Right.
I think the Republicans have a potential to pick up 10 Senate seats. Now, mm-hmm. frankly,
and,
that's not going
right.
to happen. But I
right.
think
and,
4-6 is
go ahead.
Reasonable.
Right.
And we, you know, I discussed that in my discussion.
Right. In your piece, and I want you to talk about that, because I think it's a fascinating article, but. Before I do, though, I just wanted to follow up with a quick example when you said the party is moving to the left. And we see an example here in Texas. I've been mailing you, I think you, just to give you a local perspective of what's happening here in Texas, where we have a pretty successful Governor Abbott, who's running for re-election. He's been a pretty good governor, but you know, a Democrat could give him a fight if the at least make it closer if the election was fought more around the center. But the Democrats are about to nominate, it looks like, a lady by the name of Lupe Valdez, who is extremely liberal, way to the left, someone who would have a lot of difficulty winning in Texas. So it seems to me that here they're blowing an opportunity. The same thing for the Senate with Ted Cruz and Robert O'Rourke. I mean, again, they nominate very liberal people. People say that Texas is Republican. I argue that Texas is more conservative than Republican. If there was, in fact, a conservative Democrat, like a Lloyd Benson used to be, that he could win, actually, in Texas, or at least make it more competitive. But so I just wanted to make that point about your observation about the party going to the left, because that's what we're seeing here in Texas. The party's going way to the left. I mean, way, way to the left, nominating people that can win districts, but they're not going to be able to win in the state. Go ahead and tell us about your article about the Senate, Barry.
Well, it actually was, I think, extremely fair. It actually upset more Republicans than it did Democrats, because I was quite candid. I didn't put any. I think very realistic for where we are right now. So, for example, I got some feedback about Montana because Mr. Tester, the incumbent Democrat, is vulnerable, but the Republicans haven't yet picked a candidate. And lacking a candidate against him at this point, Mr. Tester's situation is somewhat improved. That doesn't mean to say he can't lose, but it's much more difficult. I also pointed out Ohio, where Josh Mandel had to leave the race, the Republican, likely serious contender, had to leave the race for family health reasons. And now they have, I think they have a Republican congressman running against Sherrod Brown. Sherrod Brown is very vulnerable, but he's also a very able campaigner. And I basically said, as things look now, Sherrod Brown's going to be reelected. Not to say what I want to happen, but that's not my job as a journalist. My job is especially in political races, is to evaluate them. I mean, I have my beliefs and my editorial side, but when I write about election campaigns, I try to become very, very objective. No one is completely objective, but I basically said that there were a number. For example, Josh Hawley looked like he was a sure winner in Missouri against Claire McCaskill. Through no fault of his own, there's a scandal involving the governor of his state, who's a Republican, and the McCaskill is naturally exploiting that, making the race appear to be a little closer. I had to mention all that and cite that as a factor. We have in Minnesota two races. One is no race at all. The incumbent Amy Klobuchar is a shoe-in to win. But the other race, which was the race to the election to fill the appointment of Al Franken's successor, that race is a contest. And the Democratic candidate, who is the appointee, is turning out to be, so far, a relatively weak candidate. And the Republican likely winner is a state senator who is becoming more and more impressive. So that's going to be a contest. That doesn't mean to say that the Democrat won't win. This was supposed to be a Democratic year in Minnesota, but it's not. We've got Tim Pawlenty is running for governor now, running again. He had two terms and retired, and now he's coming back. He's not universally loved, even within his own party, but he's a big name, and he's a very, very able campaigner. And if he's the nominee, he could lead the Republicans to quite a red victory in November instead of a blue one. because we've got at least four contested House seats, two Republican, two Democrat. But the two Republican seats are probably not as vulnerable as the Democratic seats are. And in fact, mm-hmm. as I've pointed out, the Minnesota 8th District is almost certainly going to go Republican, a pickup of one seat right there. The first district, which the incumbent is running for governor, the Democratic candidate, mm-hmm. Is a little less clear. But so, you know, what we have here is we have races all over the country. Rick Scott, the governor of Florida, who was for a while not too terribly popular, has suddenly become mm-hmm. more popular and is a very, very strong candidate against Senator Nelson, the aging Democrat, who is not overly popular in his own state, Florida. There are a number of other races. Wisconsin could potentially be a good race, but for right now, I pointed out that even though the Democratic incumbent does not have great numbers, the Republicans have no clear candidate against her. Her name is Tammy Baldwin. So it's, you know, if you can't beat somebody with nobody.
Right. That's right.
And
that's exactly right.
And I have agreed, and I think is good common sense, candidates matter. Yes, there are issues.
Absolutely.
Yes, there's President Trump is an issue. Yes, the economy is an issue. But frankly, great candidates make the difference. It's what happened in Pennsylvania 18. A very good Democratic, moderate to conservative candidate beat a lackluster Republican in a
right.
district which was overwhelmingly Democratic, although the Republicans had carried it and President Trump had carried
mm-hmm.
it because it was blue collar.
Right.
So it's everything is very complicated this year. And one of the reasons that everything is more complicated than usual is the electorate is very volatile. You know, and you, for example, the case of Alabama is cited where the Democrats picked up a seat. Well, the Democratic senator who won is acting more like a Republican than many Republicans. Number one.
Exactly.
And number two, the Republican who lost was a totally unacceptable candidate. And the reason he lost wasn't because the Democrats won. It's because Republican voters said
That's right.
to the Republican Party of Alabama, if you give us bad candidates, we're not going to vote for them. And this is
right.
true.
I think even the difference of, 18,000, they were more write-in votes. There were like 22,000 write-in votes. And I guarantee you 99% of those were Republicans who simply said, no, we're not going to vote for Ray Moore or Roy Moore. So you're right.
And
I
also,
think the Republicans
got
real lucky. Democrats got lucky down there. Now, go ahead. I'm sorry.
But I think in the end, I pointed out in one of my pieces, the real winners were the Republicans. Because if Roy Moore had won, he would be a burden on Republicans. You run against him like the Republicans run against Nancy Pelosi, they would run against Roy Moore. And in fact,
you're right about Al Franken
to resign, and when Al Franken resigned, they may have lost a Senate seat because of that. And he resigned mm-hmm. specifically as a counterpoint to Roy Moore because the Democrats thought Roy Moore was going to win.
It's
very complicated. The point
sure
I'm
does.
Making is
sure.
we may have a program in mid-November, you and I, and we'll be lamenting the fact or celebrating the fact of the election, depending on where we're at. But the point is, I can see the Democrats taking back the House. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm not even saying that I see the signs of it. I think it's pretty fair to say that Democrats are going to pick up net seats, just as I think it's fair to say, but not a certainty, the Republicans are going to pick up net seats in the Senate. But, you know, life has a funny way of being full of surprises. And if, again, if foreign policy issues resolve, either way, if the president continues to have the success he seems to be having for now, and following, and it goes well in the Middle East and in the Far East, and in our relationship with Europe, and the economy is going well, and the stock market is up, and people's IRAs and 401ks are booming, I tell you it's going to be a very good year for the Republicans. If not,
right,
it's going to be a very good year for the Democrats.
That's right.
But we just don't
know.
We're
about, we don't know, and there's roughly 25 weeks to go, 25, 26 weeks to go before people vote. A lot of balls in the air, and as you point out in your post about the Senate, we'll have a better sense of many of these so-called red states when the Democrats or when the Republicans have a nominee. But it's all very complicated. I think you're exactly right, and I think predictions one way or another are a little bit too early. The only thing I can predict, Barry, and I think you would agree with me, is that you and I will do a show again. That's the only thing I will predict right now, that you and I will do
God
a show
willing,
again.
We will.
We'll do a show again before the election and after the election, and I hope that we do many, many before the election, because I absolutely love chatting with you, and it's so much fun to connect with you like this and to hear what you have to say, and of course always invite people to check out your wonderful website, The Prairie Editor, one of the best in the country, Barry.
Well, thank you very much. I enjoy our conversations too, and I look forward to our next one.
Well, our next one will be very soon, I'm sure. It probably in a few weeks, like we always do these things. But get back to the snow, and I say that in a funny sort of way. And hopefully the Twins can play ball soon when the snow goes away. But thank you for your time, and thank you for the great work that you do at the Prairie Editor. It's really one of the best places to go check out good information, Barry.
Thank you. Good night.
All right. Barry Castleman, the Prairie Editor. We've been chatting with Barry for a while. Always have a wonderful time when we speak with him. Well, that's going to do it, folks. Thank you for listening. April 14th, if you can believe this. April 14th. I guess the IRS day. IRS is when, tomorrow, or is it? Isn't it the next? I guess they always, if it's on Sunday, then they do it the next Monday or the next Tuesday. I don't have to worry about it because I've already filed. But I suppose if you have to go put a letter in the mail in the next couple of days, you might see some long lines over at the post office. Good night, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.